Well, good morning and hello and welcome again to Denton's Perspective, which is a daily briefing of the presidential nominating conventions. And as many of you know, from last week, we were joined out in Cleveland from the Republican National Convention. And this week, we will be doing our daily briefings from the Democratic Convention in Philly. And today we welcome former Democratic National Committee Chairman and Denton's Global Chairman, Joe Andrew, and former U.S. House Speaker and Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich, who is also a senior Denton's advisor. And I'm Kathleen O'Connor, a member of our firm's public policy and regulation practice. The purpose of our call, and we did this last week as many of you joined, and we appreciate your attendance, the purpose of the briefing is to lift the curtain from this week's Democratic Convention for our friends and clients around the globe through the insights from those who understand the politics and the policies of these gatherings probably better than anyone else. This program series may be considered as on the record. A recording of this will be available midday on our website at www.dentons.com. For those participating in today's briefings, you can learn more about our conversations by following us on Twitter at Dentons. So with that...
This is Newt.
Good morning, Speaker. How are you? Good, thanks.
Doing well.
Thanks for joining. Your participation last week was greatly appreciated, and we're thrilled that you could join us this morning. And with that, I'm going to give you kind of the first question, which is, as the Republicans huddled last week in Cleveland to nominate Donald Trump and Michael Pence for president and vice president, the speeches seem to be overwhelmingly dark in nature. Do you think we can expect a more conciliatory tone this week out of Philadelphia?
And yeah, because I think the two parties have different problems. I think Secretary Clinton's challenge is to say to people, things are going well enough that you want some improvements. And Trump's challenge is to say to people, things are going badly enough that you need some changes. And those are really dramatically different messages. And I think that's why you're getting such a substantially different approach. I think part of it's a question of which one's reality. Part of it's a political strategy question of, you know, if things are really going okay, why would you replace the team that's doing pretty well? And if things are going terribly, why would you keep the team that's going pretty well, that's in charge? And so I think that's what you're seeing play out in the two parties.
Interestingly, thank you. And Joe, do you have any comments on kind of the tone that we can and should be expecting to hear?
Well, I think the speaker is absolutely right that the fundamental challenge both parties have is, you know, which facts to emphasize as they go into this. We all know that traditionally optimism wins elections, but so does change win elections. And that's the challenge for both of them is that how do they be both change in the case of Donald Trump, but still optimistic. For Hillary Clinton, it is obviously she's going to be optimistic. She's going to prevent a much sunnier side. But how does she become the candidate change? So if you think about it, they both have this fundamental challenge at the heart of it, which is that to be both optimistic, more conciliatory, to reach more to the middle, to talk about the future in more positive terms, is difficult if you also want to be the change candidate. If you want to be the change candidate, of course, you got to change from something, as the speaker said. So since Republicans made the fatal error of not choosing Newt Gingrich as the vice president, rather than just focus on new ideas, they've got to try to talk about the facts. Since Democrats may have made the fatal error of not picking Howard Dean to be our vice presidential nominee, we at least pick someone as close to Howard Dean as possible, which is Tim Kaine, who comes from very much part of the same portion of the party as Howard Dean did, and I think will do well when it comes to trying to demonstrate both being a candidate of change as well as candidate of optimism and forward thinking.
Interesting.
Yeah,
thank you.
If I could add to that just for a second, I think Joe's exactly on target here. Part of this is a strategic problem in that each of the two teams, and I think Tim Kaine is a very good choice, probably as good a choice as Hillary Clinton could have made, because she concluded there was no Latino candidate or Latina candidate currently ready to be vice president. And now she got in Tim Kaine, somebody who did missionary work in Central America, speaks fluent Spanish. So he can, on Spanish language media, he's going to be stunningly effective, and he's from a very important swing state of Virginia. And from mayor to governor to senator, he has a record in depth, in contrast, say, to Trump. Not dramatically a better record than Pence, but certainly a record of more public service than Trump. So Canada was a very good choice on her part. The other problem from strategy, though, is there really are two very different Americas if you look at the polling data. And the Democrats have moved further to the left with the Sanders phenomena and then the Obama phenomena. The Republicans have actually, in reaction, moved further to the right. So part of it is when you're in your fundraising events and you're in your rallies and you're talking with your supporters, you're really in two very different echo chambers than you would have been 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, that's a very interesting point. And to your comment on the Tim Kaine pick, you know, he, as you pointed out, has never lost an election. He's fluent in Spanish. Do you think his presence on the ticket, Speaker Gingrich, genuinely puts Florida and other states, as you say, like Virginia, in play for Democrats with a heavy Latino population?
Absolutely. And remember that Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, North Carolina, Virginia, New Jersey, Florida, all of these have pretty substantial Latino populations, in some cases Puerto Rican rather than Mexican or Cuban, Colombian, Puerto Rican, what have you. But all of them have substantial populations. And so I think Tim Kaine is a very, very real asset to Hillary. And that, you know, that's one where she should get a big plus for having shrewdly picked the right person.
Thank you for that. And Joe, Democrats cowed last week. The Republicans couldn't help but step on their own convention with the drama surrounding Melania Trump's speech and later Ted Cruz's refusal to endorse Mr. Trump from the convention floor. But today, with the resignation of Democratic National Committee Chairman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, having that dominating the news cycle out of D.C. and Philly, it seems like drama is the new normal for this cycle. How does the Clinton campaign right the ship before this convention kind of goes the same way as the Republicans or gets out of hand?
Well, the Speaker and I tend to agree on a lot of these things. The biggest one, of course, is that we have so few people who even want to watch these conventions anymore, so maybe it's not so bad you have a little bit of drama. I noticed in the polling data today, 3% of Americans had heard of Pokemon Go, but less than 40% even knew there was a convention last week or this week. So Pokemon is doing better than either the Republicans or the Democrats right now when it comes to awareness. Obviously, this is not how anybody likes to start a convention, but the real question is there someone who can take advantage of it? Since the storyline going into the Republican convention was a question of is there going to be unity or not, if there was not, there was Ted Cruz taking advantage of it. There was Governor Kasich taking advantage of it. There were people pushing that storyline because they believed, rightly or wrongly, that it was in their own best interest. What's going to happen today is that you have the storyline, which will immediately be quashed tonight by Bernie Sanders because he will give this full-throated endorsement of Hillary Clinton. So it is, in my view, probably less likely to be as damaging as it might otherwise be. Obviously, if Bernie Sanders was not endorsing Hillary Clinton, then the whole story about the emails and the DNC would be more lasting than it otherwise would be.
Interesting. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the Sanders voters who, you know, some of whom are demonstrating on the streets in Philadelphia, much, I think, far bigger demonstrations than anything anyone saw in Cleveland. How do you think that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats are going to try and project this unity this week with demonstrators taking to the street and, of course, again, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's departure? Is it going to be a unifying exercise, do you think, Joe?
Well, as a good Midwesterner, I'll tell you, Philadelphia is just a lot easier to get to, and it's a much bigger city. So inevitably, there were going to be more demonstrators in Philadelphia. That was true, for example, between Republican conventions. Even though the last time Republicans were in Philadelphia, it was not as contentious a convention as it might be with Donald Trump, there were still a lot more protesters because Philadelphia is so easy to get to. So regardless of which party is in Philadelphia, you're simply going to have more people here because of the ease of getting there. It's also traditional, of course, that Democrats tend to have almost 2-to-1 as many protesters at their conventions and have, you know, since World War II. So the quantity of protesters, I don't think, is really going to be the issue. Obviously, the fact that there is still a portion of the Bernie Sanders supporters that are not as are not going to endorse Hillary Clinton the same way the candidate himself is clearly one of the kinds of things that she will continue to have to deal with. But I think, you know, the speaker is quite right. It's in the end of the day, the battleground states, the 11 or dozen or so states that will really be in play here, it's about both candidates trying to find ways in order to reach out to what they believe to be the targeted voters in those states. That's what the pick of Mike Pence was about. That's clearly what the pick of Tim Kaine is about. While Mike Pence is also about securing the base of the party, particularly the evangelical voters, he's perceived to obviously be someone, and again, I'm from Indiana, so I know him well, who will be able to have a softer touch when it comes to the set of issues that have defined the Republicans and the portion of the independent voters that they'll try to pull away. That's what Tim Kaine's choice is about as well. And so I don't think you're going to see Hillary Clinton really trying to move to grab that portion of the far left of the party that is going to be protesting here in Philadelphia. I mean, while there'll be attempts to mollify them, there'll be lots of other speakers who go to them, you know, Bernie Sanders most importantly, it's simply not going to be the goal of the Clinton campaign to try to get those voters.
Yeah, look, I want to emphasize two things that Joe just said. One is we're very different parties. In our party, other than maybe Goldwater in 64, I can't remember a convention, even the very narrowly decided Reagan-Ford fight in 76 when the difference was said literally 70 delegates. I can't remember a convention where Republicans sustain demonstrations that are hostile because Republicans tend to select people. The people who tend to become Republican just feel guilty if they're disruptive. You know, it's not what their mom and dad taught them to be. So it's very hard for us to have the kind of quality demonstrations that Democrats revel in. And I kept telling people that all last week in Cleveland. I said, you're not seeing any, I think they only arrested 25 people in the whole week. I said, you're not seeing any demonstrators here because they're all gone to Philadelphia. Because Philadelphia will be the fun place to be if you're a demonstrator. The second point was the Pokemon Go, which is really important and helps explain why Trump is such a phenomenon. Trump essentially doesn't come out of the world of politics. So he doesn't exist in a world where the 3% who read the Washington political journals really, really matter. Trump exists in this much larger world of his number one TV show, The Apprentice, or Miss Universe, or Who Came to His Casinos. And the result is he's much closer to picking up the Pokemon Go and understanding that the real campaign he's going to wage is in the 50% of the country that routinely avoids thinking about politics. And if he can break through there, then he becomes a historic figure. If he can't break through there, Hillary has a reasonable chance of winning.
And I'm going to disagree completely, if I can, just second, Kathleen. I think that, you know, what the speaker said is absolutely crucial. You know, we all make fun of reality TV, but the reason they call it reality TV is for a lot of people, it is their reality. And therefore, Donald Trump is familiar in a very different way than Hillary Clinton is. Hillary Clinton has got to, despite being involved in politics forever, she has to define herself and has a much more difficult job of defining herself than Donald Trump does, because Donald Trump is much more of a known factor for people who are not involved in politics. And as the speaker notes, those tend to be the swing independent voters. People who pay a lot of attention to politics, they already know, they knew who they were going to vote for, you know, 4 years ago before we even knew the nominees were. The people who are the truly undecided voters, the ones who don't pay as much time and attention to it, they're too busy and they are too attached and focused on other things. And there's no question that's where Donald Trump has an advantage. And that's why this convention will be so much more about defining Hillary Clinton than much of the media will focus on, because the media know her. The media see all that is just the art of politics rather than the reality that she's just not known as well among these swing independent voters as Donald Trump is.
Well, that's interesting. Interesting comments. I'm curious, Joe, you were chairman of the Democratic National Committee when I think Al Gore got the biggest post-convention bump that any candidate has ever seen in the polls. What do you make of, you know, the bounce or bumps that Trump may or may not get, or Hillary may or may not get coming out of these conventions? How relevant is it with so few people paying attention, do you think?
Well, there's traditionally been a bounce. I think 538 did some statistics today that showed that historically Republicans tend to get a 5% bounce, Democrats tend to get a 6% bounce. So it's important to recognize there usually is a bounce. You know, what is rare is there is not a bounce. The real question is what happens once we get to September? The post-convention bounce tends to freeze the campaigns for the summertime when less will happen, and that's going to be – it's very important that Donald Trump did get a bit of a bounce out of his. That'll help with fundraising. It clearly, you know, puts him in a better position as well. But it still doesn't really tell much of the story at all about those dozen swing states and the very small percentage of voters in each one of those states that will ultimately decide who is president of the United States. It will be fascinating to see whether or not Hillary Clinton can get even an average bounce out of this convention because of the fact that among at least the people who pay attention to politics, she is so well known. The better known you are to voters, the harder it is to get a bigger bounce, for the obvious sense that you're just well known. So I would suggest that it's not surprising that Donald Trump would not get a big bounce, no matter whether you perceive to be the convention to be a strategic mess or not. It's just that he's better known, so it's harder for him to get a big bounce. I think Hillary is better known among those who pay attention to politics, so I think it's going to be harder for her to get a bigger bounce. Al Gore had the advantage of having just one caricature of him that was relatively easy to push aside, and a convention that it was exceptionally well run and well scripted by the then chairman of the Democratic National Committee. So he had a lot going for him. But I do think that it was easier in 2000 to get a bigger bounce for Al Gore than it's easy for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton to get a big bounce.
Thank you for your thoughts. I don't know, Speaker Gingrich, if you have any thoughts on that topic.
No, I mean, I think that the Trump people have to be relatively happy with the polling numbers this morning, which range from tied to Trump ahead by 5 or 6. I think they also have a very deliberate plan of trying to clutter the Democratic convention, which started last night with Chairman Reince Priebus and the campaign general chairman, Paul Manafort, going to Philadelphia, which is back when I was active in the stuff, as Joe will remember, there were long stretches where the two parties actually gave the other party its week. And you had this sort of convention that your side ought to go on vacation. It's their turn. I don't know when it began to change so dramatically, but now we're in a business of, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're going to do everything we can to stop you. And there are no days off for either party. So it's in that sense, it's very different than the world that I originally was involved in.
Well, it's interesting. Go ahead,
Joe. I said, yeah, the speaker's absolutely right about that. For example, in 2000, I went to the Republican convention. And was one of the first of the Democrat chairs, at least, to show up at a Republican convention. And that was widely criticized at the time because the conventional wisdom was that you let each party, again, have their week and not be involved in it. You saw, obviously, a advertising buy for the Clinton campaign during the Republican convention, advertising buy by the Trump campaign during the Democratic convention now. So there will be an organized effort in order to be able to be much more engaged. Obviously, Democrats were a little standoffish during the Republican convention because the idea was let them just hang themselves, right? We don't need to comment. Whereas I think that with the Democratic convention, it'll be very important for Reese and for Paul Manafort and the party to be engaged. I think they're doing the exact right thing for them.
Well, and I think former Secretary of State Clinton announced her pick for vice president, you know, the day after the convention, hoping to step on what most expect would be a result in at least a temporary bump in the polls for Trump. The question really becomes, do you think that pick coming out so quickly will actually halt any momentum or inject anything into his bounce by announcing her VP pick and getting her show on the road, for lack of a better word, so quickly? I mean, do you think that really changed it?
Let me comment for a second, and I want to go back and build on Joe's point about Pokemon Go. In the olden days, politics existed in an arena that was political. So everybody who paid attention to politics watched what was happening, and you could say, boy, if so-and-so is smart in the morning, they'll really do well. Now you've got, for example, Trump has between Twitter and Facebook about 20 million followers, bigger than any network news show. So his ability to communicate every day with his people is something we've never seen before. And so she announced Kane, who was a good choice. I said, look, I think it's probably the best choice she could have made. And in the political world, that was a very cool thing to do, and it was very helpful to her. Then it was kind of messed up by the WikiLeaks and all that stuff. But nonetheless, it was a good step for her. But in the larger world, where, as Joe pointed out, only 40% of the country even knew that there was a convention going on, nobody noticed. I mean, this is a very dense country of very busy people who are increasingly segmented. And so there are huge blocks of people who rigorously avoid politics at any cost. They don't notice it. They pay no attention to it. And that's where you get into this tricky environment now of where you may literally not be communicating with anybody except the already politically active.
I agree completely, and I think that while this is an excellent vice presidential pick, she also is just a question of timing. If you have conventions back to back, you're almost inevitably going to pick your vice presidential nominee. You clearly want to pick it before the convention, and so that means you're going to pick it on the Friday or Saturday before the convention. So while there's no question that you try to do everything you can to stop the momentum from the other side, it's also just a question of the calendar. It really wouldn't make any sense to pick it before the other party's convention. That just gives them two targets instead of one target to fit in. So while it was strategically the right thing to do, I think this is a practical matter. It was really also the only timing, the only opportunity she had.
Interesting. And to pick up on Speaker Gingrich's comments on, you know, the 20 million followers Trump has and his ability to communicate differently with them than we've seen in past campaigns, what can, you know, Secretary Clinton do to stave off the possibility of supporters peeling off from her and going to Trump, who they regard much more as an outsider, just as they kind of regarded Bernie Sanders, even though he's an establishment candidate, but he he's so far left that he pulled a lot of people away from the Clinton camp. Is there any risk, Joe, in your mind, that those people go to Trump because he's an outside candidate and he's so different?
Well, I think we're talking about a very small sliver of the actual electorate here to begin with. So I think it would be an error for her to spend too much time trying to address the discontented Bernie Sanders supporters. They will inevitably get a lot of press in this process. But again, that's a little bit of, as the speaker noted, kind of just the echo of this political echo chamber that we all tend to be in. They do not exist in overwhelming numbers in those dozen swing states. The vast majority of them, frankly, are in places from, like, Vermont. The vast majority of them either new voters who don't have much of a tradition of voting in this process, and the numbers are very small. And at least history would tell you they'll get smaller, that the more the Bernie Sanders campaigns for Hillary Clinton, the more that Elizabeth Warren campaigns, the more the party just gets behind its nominee, that they will become less and less important in this process. Again, I think that's why a lot of people believe that Donald Trump should spend less time talking about Ted Cruz and John Kasich, because, again, the small percentage of discontented voters who might stick with them are probably, in the end, not going to vote for Hillary Clinton any more than the vast majority of the Bernie Sanders voters are going to vote for Donald Trump. The game here, the winning strategy, again, is to focus on identifiable, verified, independent, and swing voters in a dozen states.
Well said. And there's some question as to former President Bill Clinton's role in this week's convention and also in the campaign. he's proved to be something of a liability in the last Democratic Party. What role, if any, do you believe the former president will play, Joe, in the general election campaign and this week?
Well, he has probably given the best convention speeches in every convention since 1992. You know, after his first disastrous convention speech, he seems to have learned how to give a convention speech, and so he's been the star of the show. Many people believe 4 years ago he did a better job of explaining why Barack Obama should be reelected than Barack Obama did. So at the convention, I think that we're actually playing to his strong suit, that this is where he has a very good history of being able, again, to explain the logic of the party, the logic of the of why it is that one should vote for Hillary Clinton. His role after that, again, I think will be much more focused on with those voters they can identify who care about economic history. There is a very small but identifiable sliver of swing and independent voters who remember, you know, the economy and the strong economy at the end of his term, and they care about that. You know, the key in a contemporary political campaign where you can do so much more slicing and dicing, where you can identify particular voters and particular issues, try to figure out exactly where they are geographically, where and who they listen to, that's where you're going to see Bill Clinton. They'll be very careful about that targeting, and they'll use him as carefully as possible. It's always going to be a challenge for the first man, whenever you have the first woman, to be a nominee of the party, about what role they're going to play. Elizabeth Dole got these same questions when she was running, and so trying to find a way for him to both be supportive, but to use the message and his history in a targeted way, in as narrowly defined way as possible, is going to be what the campaign is going to strive for.
Interesting. Very, very, very interesting insights. Do you think that this will be this week, this convention week, will allow Hillary Clinton to stake out her own positions that are unique from Barack Obama, or do you think we can expect to see her to continue to kind of campaign in the president's shadow? Do you have any insight on that, Joe?
Well, I think this goes right back to what the Speaker and I were talking about at the beginning of the conversation. You know, the challenge both candidates have is, for Hillary Clinton, how do you become the candidate of change? For our Donald Trump, how do you become the candidate of optimism? They both have a disadvantage there when you know in order to win, it is best, in history it's been only, but let's say at least it's best, that you're the candidate of both. You're the candidate of change and you're the candidate of optimism, unless you're an incumbent running for re-election. So I do believe that she will stake out not positions that are different than Obama, but attitudes towards problems that are different than Barack Obama. And you've got to remember, again, particularly for the targeted swing voters in these dozen or so states, they're not driven by specific policy positions. When you criticize Donald Trump for not having enough specific policy positions, that's a misunderstanding of how swing voters vote. They vote on attitudes, right, on your approach, on how it is that you're addressing a given issue. So she doesn't have to take a different specific position than Barack Obama, but she will demonstrate that she has a different attitude towards some of these issues, that she's going to approach the issues differently, that her core values are the same, but that how she will attack different challenges that are in front of the country will come from a different way, a different language. I think that's what this week is going to all be about.
Very interesting. Speaker Gingrich, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I think that Hillary has to win sort of three arguments. One, that things are better than Trump says they are, and that he is offering a self-destructive level of negativity. Two, that real experience in governing, which she and Tim Kaine have in abundance, matter, and that having been a rich businessman is inadequate to then become the leader of the United States. And three, that she has real solutions that move us beyond the current situation. And that therefore you can rely on her safely to help you get to a better future. And I think she's got to somehow get all three of those done to have a successful convention.
Well, we'll look forward to watching this week to see if she is able to achieve those three. We are now at the end of our time, and thank you, Speaker Gingrich, and thank you, Joe, for your thoughts today. For those listening today, we'll be joined again tomorrow by Chairman Andrew and former White House Political Director Ron Kaufman. If anyone would like to listen to an audio recording of this briefing, it will be available midday at the Denton's website. And otherwise, we will look forward to watching today and hearing, Joe, your thoughts and Ron's thoughts tomorrow morning, same time, same place. We'll be back, and we thank everybody for joining. Have a great day.